Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
Is California ready for more water wars? Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Last year, after heavy rainfall, California voters approved billions of dollars in flood control bonds. This week, after a record dry spell, Governor Schwarzenegger's campaigning for billions in water storage projects to protect against drought. Some Democrats have different ideas about how to do it, as we'll hear tonight. On Reporter's Notebook, LA's Roman Catholic Archdiocese has settled sexual abuse cases by 221 priests. Why so few criminal charges? We'll ask District Attorney Steve Cooley. First, here's the news. We're Alney back with Which Way LA on KCRW. Last night, we talked about the LA Archdiocese's $660 million settlement for sex abuse by priests. One of our guests asked why LA District Attorney Steve Cooley hasn't filed more criminal charges. Tonight, we'll ask Cooley himself. First, this story. Last year, California voters approved $10 billion in bonds for water projects, including flood control. That was after a very wet winter. Now, after a winter of very little rain, both Governor Schwarzenegger and legislative Democrats are proposing more water bonds for next year. The objective this time is water storage. The governor wants to build two big new reservoirs. Lester Snow directs the Department of Water Resources. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Warren.
Why do we need two major new reservoirs?
Well, let me preface that by saying what the governor's proposed isn't just reservoirs. It's a pretty comprehensive package that includes conservation and groundwater storage and also fixing the ecosystem in the Delta. But the point in addressing storage, and particularly surface storage, is recognizing we have climate change. We're seeing much less snowpack, so we get much less of our water is stored in the snowpack each year, and it runs off in higher peaks. The forecasts are for the droughts to worsen as opposed to be lessened in the future. And so we look at storage, both groundwater and surface water, as a way to anticipate those changes in our hydrology and deal with them effectively.
What if we don't make the kinds of changes that the governor is proposing?
Well, I think what we're going to see is more conflict with the ecosystem, more conflict with endangered species, and a less reliable water supply, which will start affecting jobs and start affecting the economy.
Lester Snow, again, director of the Department of Water Resources for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. What about those dams, though? They are a major part of your proposal.
They are. Surface storage is a major part of what we've put on the table to deal with the future. I think one of the issues that we're dealing with is that when you bring up the issue of new reservoirs or new dams, everybody thinks of the most harmful thing that could happen. And yet what we're proposing, one of them is an off-stream, meaning it's not even located on a stream. It's move water into it when water's plentiful and be able to have it when it's less plentiful. Had the two reservoirs that were contained in SB 59, or the governor's proposal, been in place in 2006, they both would have filled during that wet year. And during this dry year, we would have had more water, both for fisheries purposes as well as for the economy.
Again, Lester Snow works for Governor Schwarzenegger. Don Parada is Senate President Pro Tem. He is a Democrat. He is the leader of the Senate. He represents part of the East San Francisco Bay Area. And, Senator, good to have you back on our program.
Thank you.
You have a different idea. You agree with the kinds of problems that Lester Snow and the governor have defined, but a different approach. Tell us about it.
Well, we do. There's a lot of common agreement. Our approach is basically to look at the need for storage and conveyance according to the various regions of the state. It's pretty clear that the needs of Southern California are much different than those in the Central Valley or the Bay Area. So rather than having a top-down approach, let's look at the regions, what's going on there. Let's take the metropolitan water Authority, which is the largest in the state and one of the largest, I think, in the country, they have said that we now have two back-to-back dry years, in the two driest years in Southern California. Their interests regionally are to clean up the San Fernando and San Gabriel Valley aquifers, which are polluted right now, could be cleaned and used for clean water underground storage. They also believe that they may need a reservoir in sometime in the future, but they would like to locate it somewhere much closer to Southern California because conveyance is always an issue. We're all looking for clean, affordable, reliable water, and the question is, how do we go about it? We also need to have what's called beneficial use, which is a fancy way of saying if you use the water, you help pay for it. We would like the state bonds to be part of what it costs to do a local project so that those who are actually benefiting by the water pay the greater cost. The Met, of course, has been willing to do that. We also have a common interest in saving the Delta. If the Delta is not preserved, the whole system collapses. And what the immediate thing to do there is to put some things in place up there that if we have a collapse for whatever reason there is, and this is a earthquake country, that we can immediately seal that off so that we don't lose our water supply. So I think it's just a question of emphasis. People in Southern California, if they could call in and tell you that they knew where Sites or Temperance Flat was, I'll give them a ride around the Bay Area. I mean, these are the two sites. They're located in deep northern California. I know the governor now is talking about someplace in Fresno, but that's also not Southern California. So that's basically the difference. I think we'll come up with a bipartisan agreement before it's all over, just the same way we did with all the other bonds last year.
Lester Snow, back to you at the Department of Water Resources. What do you think the ultimate cost will be? What's needed in the way of new bonds next year?
Well, first let me say I have a lot of agreement with Senator Parada, and it was a major step he took yesterday in issuing a concept on this. And I also agree with him. The overlap between the proposals is significant, and I think we have an opportunity to come up with a bipartisan proposal that's going to serve the state. Now, specifically to your question, I think both proposals at this point are kind of in the same ballpark of about $5 billion of additional funding, with some of it to be repaid back by the water users that benefit directly. In the governor's proposal, that was roughly $2 billion that was to be paid back, and I think there's probably similar numbers in the senator's proposal. So it really, at this point, we're dealing with decades of deferred investment in the water system, and we're arguing now over the detail of emphasis and regional versus statewide, and I think that's a gap that we can close here pretty quickly and get it in front of the voters next year.
So, Senator Parada, you're the regional approach. Lester Snow is the statewide approach. $5 billion, that sound right to you?
Yeah, right now we're just throwing darts at the wall. When you really sit down and look at some very specific concepts and projects, we have quite a substantial amount of money already that has either been approved or is in the pipeline, no pun intended. There's been about $5 billion that has not been used in previous bonds. There's about five or so, or more, actually I think more, closer, as you said, to 10 for Prop 84 and Prop 1E. So when you look at that and you really combine those funds with what we're talking about here, it's a sizable investment on, like so many other things, a long-neglected problem. This one, however, is very serious because no water, nothing else matters. That's the beginning and the end of the conversation. And we have to do things that are taking action quickly. One of the things I didn't mention that people have brought up is, they may have an existing reservoir that could be raised, so it takes half the cost and three-quarters of the time. There's a lot of good ideas out there, but what we really want to do, and I see my job, is just pushing us to a point where we get some conclusions and we start taking action. It's not just a question of spending more money. It's being able to let people know that their urgent needs can be urgently met.
Okay. Once again, Don Parada, President Pro Tem of the State Senate, a Democrat from the San Francisco Bay Area, East San Francisco Bay Area. Lester Snow, Director of the Department of Water Resources. Thank you both for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Warren.
Let me turn now to Barry Nelson. He is co-director of the Natural Resources Defense Council's Western Water Project. He has spent a lifetime studying water issues in California. He's based in San Francisco. And Barry Nelson, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We have in California periodically what are referred to as water wars, and one of the last ones was in 1982 when once again the Delta, which the senator referred to a moment ago, was involved, and the idea was to build what was called the peripheral canal around the Delta. Now, the Delta is where the Sacramento and San Joaquin rivers converge and then flow into San Francisco Bay, the Sacramento coming down from the north, the San Joaquin coming up from the south. And the Delta is said to be in big trouble. What's the problem?
Well, there are two problems in the Delta right now. The first is that biologically the system is crashing. We have one species, Delta smelt, on the brink of extinction, a number of others in danger of extinction, but we're simply taking too much water out of that system and need to find a way to take less. That's the first crisis. The second crisis is Delta levees are old and crumbling and at risk of failure, and if those levees fail, with deeply subsided farmland behind them, we could have not just a human disaster for the folks living on those islands, but an environmental disaster and potentially lost water supply for areas like Southern California that rely on the Delta for water.
When you say take too much, the reason it's taken is that it's pumped into Southern California and also into the San Joaquin Valley for agriculture there, mostly for urban uses in Southern California. What about the peripheral canal? Both the governor and I think Senator Parada have sort of hinted that we might need such a thing. What is that, and why is it so controversial?
Well, the idea of the peripheral canal was to divert what originally proposed in 1960 by Governor Brown, rejected by the voters in 1982. It would have diverted water out of the Sacramento River and bypassed the canal, the delta, on the periphery of the delta, hence peripheral canal. Very controversial because of concerns that it would be, could be, environmentally devastating for the Delta, also opposed by farmers in the Delta because of concerns that if you take all of that water out upstream, Delta farmland may simply die because it would become too saline to farm. That's 600,000 acres of farmland in the Delta. So it was strongly opposed 20 years ago by the environmental community and the Delta community itself. Those positions haven't really changed, but people are looking for new ideas for the Delta as part of the Delta Vision process that Senator Parada and the governor reached agreement on last year. That process has now just begun, and we're now exploring new ideas in the Delta, and we're really concerned that we need to make sure we actually think those new ideas through, see if we can come up with new ideas for the Delta, like something called the Eco Crescent. It's a brand new idea that might have water supply and environmental benefits, and avoid just fighting old battles on water. It's tempting to do that. We need to look for new ideas and not just refight old battles.
And, of course, a lot of interests involved, the farmers, the urban areas, the environment, as you have mentioned, not to mention the levees themselves, the devastation that might result if they were to collapse and cause flooding, in addition to that would involve homes and businesses, in addition to a lot of crops. What about the question of global warming, as the various interests represented by the two men we just talked to begin this process of trying to compromise? Are they taking global warming into consideration?
Well, we think we're only just starting to get serious about incorporating global warming into the debate about water policy. We just released a report called In Hot Water looking at that issue. One of the things that's very clear is that the old way of doing business, for 150 years in California, we pretty much have met our needs by diverting water from rivers, building dams, and pumping groundwater. And global warming is going to reduce the water available from all of those sources. And that means we're increasingly going to need to look to things like conservation, cleaning up our groundwater, wastewater recycling, things that will help climate-proof our water supply rather than rely on resources that are shrinking. Colorado River is locked in an 8-year drought. Building more dams on the Colorado River doesn't make any sense. There's simply no water left to capture on that system. We're capturing it all.
What kind of conservation are you talking about, and by whom?
Well, conservation is something we need to do statewide. The first thing to remember is that 80% of the water in the state is used by agriculture. Even as large as our urban areas are, 80% of that water is used by agriculture. Some of it is cheap. Some of that water is free. So there's a huge amount of agricultural conservation potential. Second, in the urban sector, about half of our water is used by landscaping. And most of our investment in conservation has been on the interior. So we can do more conservation savings through better fixtures in our homes and businesses and institutions, better appliances. But the big new savings are water conservation outside. And Lester Snow's Department of Water Resources thinks that the biggest new sources of water for the future in California aren't new dams. Even his own analysis shows this. The biggest new sources of water are conservation, water recycling, and cleaning up our groundwater. That's where the water is.
What about desalinization? A few years ago, they built a desalinization plant in the city of Santa Barbara. Then the rains came back. They didn't need it, and they disassembled it.
That's right. Global warming is starting to change that debate. Desalination 20 years ago was seen as sort of the lunatic fringe of the water debate. It's now starting to become more central. One of those reasons is because the energy cost of desalination has gone down as the technology has improved. It's now less expensive than some of the new dams that have been proposed. So conservation and desalination are now starting to be looked at by urban water agencies as more attractive than building new dams. Urban water agencies really don't care about the new dams that have been proposed because they're really not designed to deliver water to Southern California.
And, of course, from a political standpoint, all this is exacerbated by the fact that people in Northern California often say, I know because I hear it when I go up there, you're using our water. People in Southern California say, come on, we need the water, and you're not using it. How much of a role does that play in the political debate?
Well, you know, there's still a persistent myth out there that environmental groups and urban water agencies are fighting over dams. It's actually not true. Urban water agencies in California have found some smart ways to build storage. We've built a tremendous amount of storage in the last decade and a half without environmental opposition. Water agencies have done that in Southern California in smart ways and invested most of their money in conservation and recycling. There isn't a fight over those tools. The disagreement is between agricultural interests who want more subsidized dams that simply don't pan out from a business perspective. The urban water community really isn't interested in those facilities.
All right. The debate, once again, resuming in California over water. We will see what happens in Sacramento. Meantime, Barry Nelson, thanks very much to you.
Thank you.
Co-director, NRDC's Western Water Project in San Francisco. We'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/whichwayLA. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
We're only back with Popoter's Notebook on Which Way LA. LA's Roman Catholic Archdiocese has promised to pay $660 million to 508 victims of sex abuse by priests. It's the biggest such settlement in the country. In other jurisdictions, local prosecutors have filed criminal charges as well. Yesterday on our program, one guest asked why LA District Attorney Steve Cooley has not yet done the same thing. Mr. Cooley joins us tonight, and as always, thanks for being on our program.
My pleasure, Warren.
How come no criminal charges?
Well, there have been a number of criminal charges in Los Angeles County and a number of convictions. Your listener must not have read about the conviction of Father Wimpy some time ago and is not aware of the Father Baker case that's pending, and plus there have been several other convictions. But we must remember that about 3 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court rendered the decision in Stogner, which essentially wiped out and declared unconstitutional California's extension of the statute of limitations when it comes to child molestation cases in general. When they did that, they effectively terminated 30 cases which we had in the pipeline where SDTs had been issued and investigations were underway. It also wiped out nearly a dozen cases that were pending in the Superior Court in Los Angeles County. So your listener is misinformed about our strong track record in this area.
Wasn't a listener. It was one of the guests we actually had on the program. And in any case, you have impaneled a grand jury, have you not?
On several occasions. We've sought grand jury subpoenas on several dozen situations seeking evidence to develop cases that we were actively investigating. But as I said, the Stogner decision, the Supreme Court's decision, wiped out our ability to go forward in those cases that were either pending in court or under investigation because it declared our statute of limitations law here in California as it related to child molestation cases unconstitutional.
Yet we're talking with Steve Cooley, the Los Angeles County District Attorney. Well, what is the amount of time that the statute of limitation gives you? And I guess the next question would be, why couldn't you make the cases in that length of time?
Well, the acts that were complained of occurred decades ago in many of the cases. The statute of limitations law that we did have, that was declared unconstitutional, allowed us to reach back literally decades if certain corroborative proof was obtained as to the criminal acts. And that allowed us to file 12 cases and actively pursue 30 others. However, the Supreme Court cut back our statute of limitations law, allowing only that we could reach back to like the mid-80s. So that decision by the Supreme Court greatly limited the scope of our ability to criminally prosecute pedophile priests. Be that as it may, we still did pursue a number of cases that fell within the statute of limitations. And just a couple of examples, the Wimpy case, he was convicted, he went to state prison. The Baker case, that is pending, and we're pursuing that because that was within the statute of limitations. We'll pursue any case that we can lawfully pursue under the law.
What about new documents that may be available because of the settlement? One of the issues, as I understand it, is that the Archdiocese fought the release of documents for such a long time that statutes of limitations ran in some cases.
No, the litigation over the obtaining the documents that was not did not impacted by the statute of limitations issue. They did litigate, and we litigated successfully against the Archdiocese from the Superior Court trial level all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we were successful, and that's how we got the documents in the Baker and the Wimpy cases. That was very protracted litigation, but it did not prevent us from filing any cases. What it did do was it kept us from pursuing certain cases we'd already filed, because the statute of limitations issue barred us from further prosecution.
I suppose, in some sense, you have answered this question, but let me put it to you because it comes from John Manley, one of the attorneys for some of the victims in these cases. He says that you don't want to prosecute priests because you don't want to alienate the Catholic vote.
Well, that doesn't stand scrutiny when we have prosecuted historically a dozen cases involving priests, seminarians, or ex-priests, and we have cases pending. Mr. Manley was a civil plaintiff's lawyer who has his sort of view in the world. He's just wrong when it comes to the facts. Probably no prosecutorial agency in the country has as effectively or as aggressively prosecuted these cases than the Los Angeles County DA's office, and we will continue to do so.
Let me turn it around the other way. One of the attorneys for the Archdiocese says that by saying that Cardinal Mahoney and others were guilty of moral failure and making other such comments, you, in fact, have incriminated them when you don't have the evidence.
Well, that's Mr. Hennigan, and I don't quite know where his quote came from. I have said it before, years ago. I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again. The way the Archdiocese has handled this matter in terms of these child molesting priests does represent a great moral failure. They had children placed in their trust. Individuals violated that trust in the worst possible criminal way, and certain people within the hierarchy of the church did not take the appropriate action with respect to that criminality. That being said, a moral failure does not necessarily equate to what may result in a criminal prosecution. There is a distinction there, and that was the distinction I was trying to make. Mr. Hennigan apparently did not get the distinction.
Michael Hennigan, attorney for the Los Angeles Archdiocese. A final question. Because of this, the way the settlement has worked out, a retired judge is going to decide which records are going to be made public and which are not. Many people, they say, they doubt that the full truth of what really happened, how much Cardinal Mahoney knew and what he did or didn't do, will never really be known. Do you agree with that?
There may be something to that. We've written a letter today. Bill Hodgman from my office, who's headed this overall investigation, has written a letter at my direction to Justice Pennelly, requesting that as he goes through the materials provided and makes his findings and determines if there's a privilege, that that information be immediately released to our prosecutors so they can evaluate it in the context of our historical investigation. We've also written a letter to all of the plaintiff's attorneys, including Mr. Manley, that if they have any information whatsoever that they have discovered in the course and scope of their civil litigation that may relate to obstruction of justice or other criminal acts, we're urging them to turn that over to us. In a sense, the civil settlement allows different individuals who may, including the Archdiocese, who may have information that may be relevant to what we're trying to accomplish, to give that to us, let us evaluate it, and then make a decision one way or the other as to any potential criminality.
Do you think criminal cases will result?
I'm not going to predict because we don't have the information yet. I'm just happy that the civil settlement at least apparently has the possibility of us getting information that we've historically not been able to obtain.
District Attorney, Los Angeles County, Steve Cooley, thanks as always for being with us.
Okay, Warren, thank you.
Which Way LA, produced tonight by Francis Anderton and Dan Konecki, our technical directors Phoebe Zimmerman. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.